Good evening. I'm an addict. My name is Jennifer. And I'm really proud of you, Sonia, for coming up and doing that. And I just want to have a moment of silence for the addict still suffering, if I may. Thanks. I'm a little nervous. I figured 10:30 at night, maybe 18 people. And then my girlfriend says to me, "Oh, everybody's going to that." And I said, "What?" She said, "Yeah, the main speaker plugged it." "Oh, this is going to be a good one." So I get the paperwork a couple weeks ago, right? And it says, you can't fix a spiritual problem with a material solution, right? And I sign in and I go, "Oh, wait, you have a misprint here. Physical? What is that? Fucking and fighting? Like, what is that?" I had to say it because I still need help, right? It's the we. So luckily Lynn says to me, I just think of it as anything that I can get my hands on. And I was like, right, wrap my mitts around, right? And what I thought of when I was asked to speak about this topic, first of all, my clean date is December 15th, 1985. And I say that's... Thank you. And I say that simply because I need to date myself with this story, which is my first job in recovery. Well, let me go back a little bit. Like, I started using when I was 8 years old. I had a sister in high school who had a boyfriend who didn't have parents, so my mother sort of took him in, and he was fine, and he drove a motorcycle, and he pissed everybody off in my family. Like, my dad did one of these, raised his eyebrows at him. "What are you doing with my daughter?" And I know he stole my brother's stash and, all that. So everybody was kind of fed up with him, but I looked up to him. I was 8, and I had starry eyes for him, and he got me high for the first time. I mean, he used to throw me on the back of his motorcycle, and he caught my brother kicking my ass once, and he just picked him up and lifted him up above his head, really, and like threw him down on the ground and said, "Bitch, if I ever catch you touching her again, you're dead." And I was like, "God, if there is a God, he is it." Right? And he got me high for the first time, so I was all about that religion, right? And so... And I didn't believe in God. When I was coming up, I was the baby of 4, and I grew up in this Italian Catholic family, and my parents kind of got wise one day, like, why are we getting up every Sunday morning and dressing these kids in their best and making them sit on these hard pews? My two brothers were racing around the church. My parents were just, so by the time I came up, I think they gave up, and they were having too many babies, and they were like, "The Pope is wrong." Okay. So I'm kind of lucky. I didn't get that whole religious thing, but I didn't really believe in God because they did give me the opportunity by sending me to like a religious school, CCD. I don't even know what it stands for, honestly. Somebody up after me is going to come up and tell me what it stands for. I know, and that's good. But anyway, so I came home one day and I said, "Mom, I don't really understand it. I mean, we draw these pictures of like, what's that fruit in the basket thing?" She goes, "Oh, cornucopia." "Yeah, whatever. I don't understand it." I'm sitting in class one day and the teacher's up there and she goes, And God is everywhere." And I'm sitting at this desk, right? And it's one of those desks where the little cubby hole where you put your books, and it's all like got pencil shavings and pen marks, ink marks, and Johnny was here, and gum and shit like that. It's disgusting. You don't want to put your hands in that, right? And I said, and she said, "Yes, Jennifer." And I said, "Is God in this desk?" And no shit, she goes, "Well, yes, of course." It'd be another thing if she said, "Well, God made man, and man created this beautiful desk and cut down a tree and knew it was a gift from God and all." But no, she just went, "Well, yes." I was done. So Mickey got me high, and I was when I was 8 years old, and I loved it, and I took to it. And that same year, we went to this New Year's Eve party as a family, and I had a cousin who was the same age as me, and she was always like valedictorian and cheerleader. And she had the boyfriend at West Point, right? And I was the one who was failing out of ninth grade, and hitchhiking everywhere. And so, and she, You're hitchhiked? That's so... Oh, I'm going to tell. So anyway, so this New Year's Eve party, right, we're 8 years old, and they give us each a little glass of champagne. And I drank it, and I got that instant warm feeling. And I said to my cousin Elise, I said, hey, you distract the adults. I'm going to go get some more. And she was like, again, oh, I'm going to tell, you know. I said, I'll tell you what. Let's play hide and seek. I'm going to count to 100. You count to 100. I'm going to go hide. One, two. And, you know, you come find me. So I get rid of her, and I go get more. And I don't know what happened. You know, I'm a little warm and fuzzy. And she looks for me later, and she goes, what happened to you? You never found me. Well, obviously, you've outsmarted me. That was the first time I got loaded, you know. Just went from there. So by the time I was 12 years old, I was ripping and running, and they talk about jails, institutions, and death. And I went to 3 different high schools as a result of my using. I mean, there were always these parent-teacher conferences, you know, looking at me like, well, what are you going to do with your life? And my attitude was like, if everybody would just leave me the fuck alone, I'll be fine. Not that I had some sort of future plan, because I didn't. You know, I was thinking, like, I just wanted to rip and run, and I didn't want any of that. You know, I'm not going to go study for SATs. And, I mean, I wasn't thinking, like, you know, find a mate, procreate, college degree, job. You know, none of that. I really wanted everybody to leave me alone, really. And my solution was to be loaded all the time because that was the only way I was comfortable. I was never comfortable in my own skin. So I started ripping and running every day by the time I was 12. And skipping school. I mean, I failed in 8th grade. And I hitchhiked everywhere. That was my, you know, that was my brand of insanity. I mean, I just got in the car with anybody. And if they didn't sit instantly say, you know, you want to, like, you know, do you want to smoke or do you want to, you know, let's go to this party. If somebody was just giving me a ride out of the goodness of their own heart, I would just say, oh, you know what, I forgot something. And could you pull over and I got to get out. And as soon as they were gone, I'd stick my thumb out again, as soon as they were out of sight. So by the time I was in my third high school, I was introduced to this fellowship, and when I came in, I really thought, it's really great for you people. Good job, you know, not for me. And I kept ripping and running, and things happened rapidly. You know, like one time and because I hitchhiked, I never knew where I was in the Washington area. I grew up in D.C., and I didn't know if I was, like, in Maryland, Virginia. I'd just go to these parties. I'd wake up on people's couches, and they'd be like, do you want bus money or something? You know, so humiliating, right? I didn't see anything wrong with that. I raided people's medicine cabinets. You know, if it said, do not drink or mix with alcohol or operate heavy machinery. I mean, that's where I was going. And I was, like, sexually assaulted a couple times, but that didn't really matter because part of that's my story and part of that was my bottom and part of that was, for me, it was just this sort of acceptance of, this is what life is about for me. I'm not like everybody else. And I don't want to be like everybody else either, right? So in early recovery, I was 18, and I had graduated high school clean, and then I subsequently relapsed. But eventually I got clean in that December, and I got a job, my first job. And it was a Hallmark store, and like $3.18 an hour, minimum wage. And my attitude was like, they're lucky I show up. They're lucky sometimes I even come on time, right? I remember this guy shared in a meeting, he said, I think they should have a line for people like us at the Giant. And I concurred, I thought, yeah, you know. My mother gave it to me straight one day, she goes, what, you're just doing what everybody else does. You know, it took me down a notch, right? What? But we need, you know, recognition. So anyway, $3.18 an hour. And I started, like, lifting stuff, you know. First it was a couple of cards, then it was calendars and coffee mugs and stuffed animals, and then they got bigger and they got bigger. I even, like, threw one in a garbage bag, this big stuffed animal, and, like, brought it out to the dumpster, right, and collected it later in the dark alley at night. And so I was giving all these things that I was taking, and I had to take something every day because I rationalized it, well, I'm only making $3.18. I deserve more, right? I was giving these things to my friends in recovery, my new friends in recovery. Here, I got you a coffee mug. It's got little cats and balloons and shit on it. Anyway, So I, a friend of mine one day said to me, you know, I notice you have all this stuff and you're giving it away, and I can't imagine that you can afford this stuff on your minimum wage now or job. And, you know, he said like this, he goes, you know, you might want to rethink that job because, it might rock the foundation of your recovery. And at first I was like, well, what the fuck does he know, right? And then I went home that night. It was food for thought for me, and I realized he's right, you know, and I got it. You know, if I'm stealing, I already feel like shit about myself. I already don't like myself. You know, it's a weird juxtaposition of coming into recovery. It's like, I don't think a lot about myself, but I think everything about myself because I'm entitled, right? And, you know, when he said that, I went home that night and I thought, yep, this could really toy with the foundation of my recovery. And I knew he was looking out for me, and it was that gentle, loving, we can, instead of that, like, you're just another fuck up. You're a thief and so-and-so. It wasn't like that, you know? That's what I was used to. And, you know, even though I had a lot of fuck you in me back then, I luckily was able to see what he was talking about. And the next day I called him and I said, all right, what do I do? Because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know about solution or being in the solution. And he said, what you do is you write a note giving your 2-week notice and you give it to your boss next time you go into work. And you finish out that 2 weeks. And you show up on time and you leave on time. And you don't take anything more. So I said, okay, I think I can do that. And then I got a job at a grocery store attending a salad bar, which was good for me because I had no interest in stealing chickpeas and black olives. You know, I wasn't filling my pockets. And so that was like, you know, I was getting in touch with that filling the void with the material stuff or the physical stuff, you know, the tangible stuff. And of course, coming in with low self-esteem, I wanted the nice clothes and, you know, the nice shoes and the nice things and the nice car. And, you know, and I saw other people around me kind of obtaining these things, and I thought, these people stay clean, you know. And for me at that time, it was all about the outside because my insides were just wrecked, you know, physically and spiritually. And I don't think I was in touch with any emotions at that time. So it was really easy to reach for material things, you know, and it was really easy to, like, fill that void, food, sex, shopping, the typical stuff that we all reach for. And finally, I couldn't fill that void anymore because I had, like, books on my shelves that I bought that I'd never read. And clothes in my closet that I'd never even worn, that I said, oh, what a cute blouse. I just have to find the right trousers or skirt for it. I better go out, look more, you know. And gotta have more. And that whole thing just kept creeping in about, like, I don't feel so good about myself anymore. You know, and I knew the solution was here because I was going to meetings, and I was, you know, feeling good about being in meetings. You know, I was like, clean today and let's jump on the wagon and go to coffee and all that. And, you know, I got a lot out of that. And I learned how to like myself and I learned how to look myself in the eye through all that. But I still hadn't written a fourth step because I didn't really want to open Pandora's box. And I finally, it was either like, you know, that material filling the void thing just wasn't working anymore, and I wrote that fourth step, and I got in touch with a lot of stuff. And God, I believe this to this day, God sent me a sponsor at that time who had a lot of similar experience, that she'd been through what I had been through, and I found safety. And that was so important for me. And, you know, I was really blessed with that. And you know, it's just a matter of finding balance of, you know, like, you know, like right now I'm writing my 11th step and the guide is saying, like, well, how do you pray? You know, and like, what a simple question. But I was like, well, how do I pray? I mean, sometimes I pray like this. Sometimes it's that foxhole prayer, you know, God help. And I recently expanded my prayer, which I used to be, and this is true, you know, I used to be really afraid to go beyond, like, thy will be done, not mine, because I always heard, like, be careful what you pray for. And in the beginning, I prayed for that man, and when I got him, it was a shitload of trouble. So I never did that again. I was like, oh, okay, that's what they're talking about. You know, ooh, ow, ooh, right? So I know not to go there. So anyway, I've expanded my prayers and found out that it was okay. Like, there was no consequences. And just simple things like, thank you, God, for this day. It's beauty and it's late. Please make me the person you would have me be. Soften me. Because I came in here with a really hard exterior. Lots of fuck you. And I still have that. That comes out, sometimes. And I'm not proud of that, but I know that I can turn to a higher power. And I'm not proud of it. I mean, I remember going through this store one day, and I was just walking down the aisle with my basket, and this woman comes down the aisle, and she's got the thing in the phone ear, and she goes, can you believe it? This woman see me coming. She don't even get out of my way. And I just stopped, and I looked at her, and I went, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. It's your world. And I was ready to, do that, in your face. I don't know where that comes from. I don't like it. But I, luckily she didn't say anything, because... I had that arsenal of whiplash tongue, oh, it must suck to be ugly, and then I have to think these, you all taught me, think it through. I think, are you worth going to jail for? I'm sorry, that's the truth. I still have a hard time going past a car looking in, what's in there? Because that was my old MO. And I remember, I had about 6 years clean. I was in New York City with some friends in recovery. And I just remember having that urge to shoplift. And I called my sponsor back in Maryland, and I said, Jeannie, I feel like stealing. It was probably I'm not in my territory and get away with it type of thing or whatever. And because the disease will sneak up on you. I really believe that. And she said, well, Jennifer, did you? And I said, no. And she goes, well, you're not what you think you are what you do. And that stayed with me, because that made me feel like I'm okay. And oftentimes I just come in here because I just need to know that I'm okay, that I'm just one of you guys, and that just because I have these thoughts doesn't mean I'm a total mess, I also get a lot of positive thoughts in here, I come out of meetings and I take these little gems, my friend Mick one time said, I want to be the person my dog thinks I am. I love that. I love that. I want to be the person my dog thinks I am. And sometimes I'll just take that. Or I heard this one, THINK, an acronym for THINK, THINK. So before I speak, let me think. Is it T, thoughtful? Is it H, honest? Is it I, intelligent, emotionally intelligent? Is it N, necessary? And is it K, and I remember. Anyway, I don't. Oh, is it kind? Is it kind? And so anyway, and then I got engaged to be married at one point in my recovery, and we broke up. And it was necessary. It was a very necessary thing, but it was still a bone crusher. Right. It was a bone crusher. I didn't eat for weeks. I walked around. I carried this half gallon of carrot juice to meetings. It's all I could eat. I just drank carrot juice. I was orange. I was orange. People would look at me and go, "How do you drink that shit?" I couldn't get it. Anyway, it was a bone crusher, And I realized at that time, this was 5 years ago, I realized at that time, I can't shop my way through this one. I can't eat my way through this one. I can't fuck my way through this one. I mean, I just knew, and I reached, and it was a very humbling experience. And I knew, I needed help. And where I lived at the time, I lived on an island, and it was geographically challenged. It was 100 square miles, and it was very small. And I had a sponsor who lived on Nantucket, the island next to where I lived. And then she moved to Portland, Maine, and she was my sponsor. But the writing was on the wall. She became less and less available. One of my sister sponsees who lived out in the Bronx, she had come to Cape Cod for this convention. She was going to do her fourth read her fourth step to our sponsor and do their fifth step, and our sponsor never even showed, you know. So the writing was on the wall, but I was like in denial, like, well, you know, I can call her if I really need to. But that experience made me like ask somebody with less clean time than me, please help me, help me. And I opened up that guide, you know, I brushed the dust off of it, and I opened it, and I started writing. And I, you know, those questions aren't numbered, right? Who thought of that? Sorry. I'm sure it was a group conscience. We can't number those. No. So that prompted me, as a result, instead of numbering, that prompted me to actually write the sentence out.
Right.
How do I pray? How do I meditate? How do I view the God of my understanding? And as I'm writing the question, it helps me to wrap my brain around the answer. I remember writing one day, it said, the question was like, what makes me think that I can't safely use again? And I was like, well, I can use safely again. I don't know what are they talking about. I couldn't wrap my brain around the solution. I had to call my girlfriend and say, well, what does this question mean to you? I can't get to the solution. I'm hitting a wall here. And she goes, Jennifer, what are you, nuts? Like, do you think you can use safely again? And she said, you did A, B, C, D. You know, she knew my story. Do you think you can go out there and do it again? You know, the question is like, for myself, like, you know, I can make that choice to get back in the cage with the gorilla, but when I'm done with the gorilla, is the gorilla going to be done with me? Right? You know, you're going for the door and you're like, oh, you know, you get dragged back. And I don't, you know, people come in here. When people relapse and they come in here and they have the courage to come back, God bless them. And I listen. I listen because I don't want to go up to them afterwards and be like, what happened? You know, I don't want to be like the National Enquirer all up in their pain, you know. They're in enough pain. So when they choose to share that, I listen, I pay attention. Because I know this disease is out there. And I think, you know, sometimes in my own thinking, yeah, I got another run in me or whatever. But I think about that bit in the basic text in the second step about, like, would I walk up to somebody and ask somebody, would I want a heart attack? I love that one. Do you mind if I have a fatal heart attack right here in front of you? Are you all right with that? You got a cell phone, right? 911, it's easy. No, I'm just kidding. But oh, look, there's one right here. Here you go. No. Oh, look, it's 11 o'clock. No, so. So when I still get that urge, like, you know, this will fix me. If I had the right wardrobe, I'm job hunting right now. I don't really have a wardrobe. I got like a working at a Starbucks green apron kind of wardrobe. I don't have all that. I don't dry clean. I don't go like, let me get my shirts. No. And it's just not my speed. Whatever. It's like intimidating, you know, it's sort of like, I don't have anything to wear, you know, I want to go out and fix that, you know, I could go rack up the credit card, but I just choose not to, because when those bills come, and I don't like paying the minimum for the bill, it just doesn't, for me, that doesn't feel good, and I like to be comfortable in my own skin, because as I mentioned before, I just was never comfortable in my own skin, and when I got here, and you know, and I'm grateful that I found a God of my understanding in here, because I wasn't really interested. When I first came in here, I saw those steps. I was like, well, I can do all the ones that don't say God. So I picked up the eighth step like that. I sat down and made a list, like, immediately, because that didn't have anything to do with God. Mom, Dad, Grandma, Grandpa. My sponsor went, no, wait, well, let's put that away for now. And I started believing in higher power through other people, because the people in here who seemed like they were comfortable in their own skins, they were the ones who talked about believing in a higher power. And whether I was conscious of that or not, I believed that. I mean, I wanted that. Whether I was conscious of it or not, I really craved that. And I didn't know how to pray. Thank God for the Serenity Prayer, because I just really didn't know how to pray. And I remember taking public transportation in early recovery, and people come up to me and go, is that your real hair color? I'd be like, oh, get away from me. Yes, the drapes match the rug. God grant me the serenity, or... You get the picture. I'm a redhead, I'm a weirdo magnet. It comes with the territory. Anyway. Joke if you will. No, I'm kidding. I love my life, I gotta tell you. I love being clean. I found laughter in here. I never used to smile. I love it when my mother says to me today, "You never used to smile. You have such a gorgeous smile." I had a hard time laughing in here at first. It was such an uncomfortable feeling, laughing. It was so uncomfortable. Now it's so natural to me. You know, and I'm like comfortable in my own skin today. Not only because of the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous, but because I found the God of my understanding in here. And I still, you know, 22 years clean, I still can't absolutely define, have a definitive definition of my higher power. Because I try, well, first of all, for me, I just don't mind fuck it. Like, you know, I just, it's like, it's very simple. When I pray, when I choose to use that tool, I get relief. I may not get relief in the time that I want, but I'm always guided. And I've been, you know, really struggling lately. And prayer has just been helping me. Sometimes it's just like, please, for this moment, I can't handle it. And I just give it to, please take this from me because I can't handle it. And that's okay. Because I know that when I run on self-will and I'm reaching for those material or physical things to fill that spiritual void, it might be a quick fix, but it makes me feel like shit, you know, in general. And so it's really hard to strike a balance in here. And, you know, I just keep striving every day, and I never want to take this thing for granted. You know, it's a gift. It's a daily gift. It's a blessing. You know, and I found myself in here, not only through the steps and sponsorship, but the God of my understanding. Because I like who I am today. You know, and I'm comfortable in my own skin. You know, not every day is like, woohoo. You know, sometimes I'm very challenged. But I have a lot of people in my life who love me. And I have forged amazing relationships in here. And I'm just really grateful to be clean today. Thank you guys for listening.
Yeah. All right, now our second speaker, Artie.
My name is Artie, and I'm an addict. And I am a proud and participating member of the Promises Freedom Home Group in the Baltimore area. We are a 12-step, 12-tradition, and 12-concept meeting. If you're ever in Bmore on a Monday or Wednesday between 8 and 9:30, stop down and see us. I first would like to say that I'm impressed. I ain't never seen this many addicts come in one room since they were handing out testers on Fayette and Lexington. But I was sitting there watching as people were coming in and people were coming in, and I had to look at the program because this ain't a drama topic. This ain't after the but then what? Or anything like that. But like the room got filled. I'm impressed. And I also need to go through the official disclaimer. I am an individual who can articulate the language with the proper enunciation and pronunciation to give an oral dissertation in any format that I may have to present in. I have the gift of gab. But for the censors out there, sometimes you have to say certain things in a certain way. And if I could have a little group participation, anybody in here ever feel like shit? Just raise your hand. Shit is not a feeling. But if you an addict and you say, "I feel like shit," another addict knows exactly what you're talking about. They know how intense and how painful it is. So there are certain times where I may use some profanity. It isn't because I can't find other words. I'm trying to relay the feeling. See, I'm an addict who has the disease of addiction, which means I have a disease of the feelings. I could never cope with my feelings. Couldn't half the time identify what I was feeling. And as a result of that, picture a little skinny kid sitting on a New York City basketball court. Doesn't feel like he fits in anywhere. never thinks that he measures up. Whenever he's in a crowd, he still feels alone. When he goes home, he's sort of like the one that always gets in trouble, the one that's always being punished, the one, well, the firstborn always does the right thing, the thirdborn always gets the break, but the one in the middle? See, even before I started using, I had core issues. I am the oldest male, the middle child, and I'm a junior. A lot of expectations placed in there. And I'm not talking about the expectations of my parents. I'm talking about the unrealistic expectations I put on myself once I realized what situation I was in. So as a result of being not ignorant but naive, I started looking outside, outside of the family, outside of the home, outside to make me feel fine inside. So somebody gave me a substance. And that substance relieved the pain. Not only did it relieve the pain, but it gave me some things I didn't think I had, but were in me the whole time. It gave me the ability to go to the dance and ask somebody to dance. And if they said no, not feel like shit, because then you cuss them out. It gave me the ability to, like, you know, when you knew you was wrong, when you knew that, like, there's gonna be some repercussions, that you didn't care, that you could handle it. So because I was naive, I got hooked on a substance. Substance hooked me into a lifestyle, and that lifestyle ended up being a prison sentence, a 20-year sentence. I've never had to do time, but I know what hard time is. Because if you're an addict, you have done hard time. If you're an addict, you know what solitary confinement is all about. And so I got caught up in that, and then it's like, you know, the whole time I'm going through trying to find a physical solution. Because we call that substitution. You know, at first it started with a little bit of Swiss up and a little bit of marijuana. Then I graduated to, back in those days, and I'm dating myself, King Heron. And I'm an individual, I'm a dinosaur. And I'm not talking about my time in the program, because my clean date is May 5th, 1988. I'm talking about, I go back to the days of the Deuce tray bags, the murine eyedroppers, the mayonnaise tops. I go back to those days. And I went to that. And then after a period of time, I graduated to that instantaneous stuff that takes you up real quick and drops you even quicker. And through all of that, I'm looking for a physical solution for the spiritual problem inside. The problem inside is I don't feel whole. And our literature tells us about it every day. We read it every day, and sometimes I wonder, do we realize what we read? It says, first, through our inability to accept personal responsibility, we were actually creating our own problem. Never want to take a look at me. Never want to take a look at the part that I played in what was going on. Then there's another piece of the literature we read every day. We felt the need for something different, thought we had found it in drugs. I've been clean damn near 20 years. I still got the need for something different. I still feel as though if I can find that right thing, I'll be all right. Just like when I was using, desperation can be a wonderful thing. It really can. because at one point I'm feeling the pain of active addiction, but I haven't gotten to the point where I said I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. And my thing was, if I can just get a package and turn it over and make $750,000, I'll be all right. Now, that's a perfect example of the terminal uniqueness that an addict has, because anybody else would have either said half a million or a million. I got to be unique and say 750,000, three quarters. As things got worse, it became a thing of, if I can just hit the lottery, not for a million, but $750,000, I'll be all right. And then just before the end, it was, if the armored car would go down Baltimore Street and a bag would fall out the back with $750,000, I'll be all right. Now, I'm talking about some real painful times, but I'm also talking about how that desperation can be a gift to push you in a direction that you weren't trying to go. Because it was after that I gave what we call the addict's prayer, God, please help me. And see, at the time, I didn't understand that the longest distance that any addict has to travel is 18 to 24 inches. Intellectually knowing something up here to internalizing it in here. And in that desperate state, that prayer came from my heart. God, please help me. So I got clean. However, just because you get clean doesn't mean everything's all right. Because I have a disease that is progressive. I have a disease that they still ain't found a cure for, contrary to popular opinion. I have a disease that knows me better than I know myself. I have a disease that sometimes can talk to me in a sweet, soft, subtle, and seductive voice. Yeah, you can do it. Won't nobody know. And if you get caught, just tell your sponsor and he'll tell you what step to work. However, this disease hasn't told me that, like, you still have an inability to manage your feelings. And when you get caught, you got to deal with things like guilt, embarrassment, shame. And those were feelings you got high over, Artie. It doesn't tell me that. So it's like, okay, I'm clean, and I'm going through the process of trying to stay clean. And I, too, when I first got here, me and God weren't like that. You people pissed me the fuck off when y'all talked about God. Because y'all talked about God like he was your next door neighbor and you cut each other's grass on the weekends, had cookouts on the holidays, and exchanged gifts at Christmas. I wasn't feeling none of that when I first got here. My relationship with God was, for the longest time, you don't bother me, I won't bother you. And that's how we got along. So when I got here and y'all are talking that God stuff, it really bothered me. So consequently, when I get to the third step, I got a problem. How do you turn it over into something that you don't have no faith, no trust, no belief in? So thank God for the concept of sponsorship. Because my sponsor told me there's only two things you need to know about God. One, there is a God. And two, you ain't it. Thank God I have a sponsor that, like, didn't allow me to go through the intellectual nonsense that from the very beginning he had me writing. There's something about writing. When you write something and you put pen to paper, you cannot go through self-delusional. There's something about when you write it down and you look at it, you say, that ain't right. And as I was writing on my third step, what I got in touch with is, in the third step, you don't define God, you find God. Because my ego told me if I define God, I'm going to define God in my image because I got control issues. And if I can define God to be me, then I'm in control. See, that need for something different for me is instant gratification. That's why I need to be in control, because if I'm in control, everything will work the way I want it to work. And everything will definitely work the way I want it to work, because first of all, I can do a hell of a job in just physically intimidating. Then aside from that, I have a great talent for emotional blackmail. I will make you feel like you owe it to me to do what I want you to do. And then if all else fails, I can play victim. And from playing victim, I once again, it's still the emotional blackmail. I'm playing on the sympathies. But that doesn't cut it. Because it comes a point in this process where you gotta face you. There comes a point in this process where you can no longer live with being a fake, counterfeit individual. And I can't handle it anymore. So what I had to do was get real, because you see, at this point, am I at the point of a sixth step? And in the sixth step, well, let me put it to you this way. My first trip through the first five steps was only an exercise in mental masturbation. And mental masturbation is just like physical masturbation. You get relief, but you don't get no satisfaction. And so in the sixth step, I had to get real, because at that point, I don't know about anybody else, but the way I typically work the sixth step is, first, I'll figure it out. I'm going to fix me. And I'll figure it out and figure it out and figure it out until I can't figure it out. And I'll figure it out some more. And eventually, I get to the point of surrender. Eventually. And at that point of surrender, I can then do what the sixth step talks about. But the only thing for me that comes with time is my ability to recognize that surrender point just a little bit sooner. I still struggle with that. I struggle with it because I'm an addict. And a lot of times we get hyped up on our own BS about being an addict. A lot of times we talk about how we work in the program, and God damn, y'all be sharing like Shakespeare. Some of y'all, I think, can walk across water. And I be wondering, what kind of program am I working? You know? But we have this thing called the literature. And in the literature, it talks about any clean addict is a miracle, and keeping the miracle alive is an ongoing process of awareness, surrender, and growth. For an addict, not using is an abnormal state. I'm supposed to fuck up. Being clean is abnormal for me. I'm going against the grain as I do this. So that tendency to do things that, anybody ask themselves why? Did something 14 carats stupid, knew you shouldn't have done it, knew from the very beginning it wasn't gonna work, but you did it anyway, and after the fact you say, why? If you have to ask yourself why, you may wanna look at, are you still in touch with, you're an addict. Because that's what we do, we self-destruct. But the beauty of this whole program is that our self-destruction isn't a Hurricane Katrina type catastrophe anymore. It becomes more manageable. Recovery is about progress. It's not about perfection. And as I make progress, I begin to find out that, yeah, I am getting better. Yeah, day at a time is becoming more comfortable for me to live in this world. Because the bottom line is, put me in jail, I'd be able to learn how to meet the right people, trade commissary, stack my bunk, and all the other stuff. Okay? I would know how to fit in there naturally. Send me out there, I don't know the rules. I don't know the rules, and how do you play any game if you don't know the rules? So what I do is I come here. I come here, I listen to you share your experience, because sometimes if I just use just a little bit of a second step, I ain't got to do it because some of y'all have already done it for me. That is the beauty of the 12th step in giving away what was freely given to me. Because if I just sit back and listen, not hear, but listen, then maybe I don't have to go through the same experience. But the paradox of all that is, as addicts, we got all the answers. I can remember having, I think it was about 4 months clean, Wendell, we were having an argument about the fourth step. And we going back and forth, back and that's my sponsor over here. Back and forth, back and forth. And he just stops, looks at me, and he says, Artie, what can you tell a know-it-all? Know-it-all, know-it-all. You can't tell a know-it-all nothing. He got up and walked away. And I hold on to that because so many times in this process, I can fall back into that space. But that was the easy part of all this. See, I have a disease of the feelings, which means that anything my emotions get tied up into can create problems. And I don't get more problematic than when I'm in a relationship. Because my emotions can cloud my judgment. That I can't, if I'm working a real second step, what I'm supposed to do is think before I act so I can act like I've been thinking. But when you get caught up in obsessive lust, raging jealousy, overbearing envy, overwhelming insecurity, and devastating inadequacy, you a babbling idiot. And the area that has been the toughest has been where my greatest growth has come. Because I too have done like most of y'all have done. You know, you go through the breakup in a relationship, you are completely devastated. You are going through things like, you hear somebody say just a syllable. She had a three-syllable name, but you knew they said her name. That if a certain model car goes down the street, you got to see who's in the driver's seat and who's in the passenger seat. The inevitability of dialing the number when you know they're not there just to hear the voice on the recorder. And as I'm going through this stuff, thank God for Narcotics Anonymous is a support group. We meet to help each other stay clean. My experience says within the support group of Narcotics Anonymous, you better get a support network. You better get some people that are going to tell you the unadulterated truth no matter what. You better find some people that care more about your life than care about your feelings. Because I can remember, and Charlie, you were there when me and that lady broke up. And Henry and the boys came over and said, we sick of this sniveling. Nigga, get off the cross. We need the wood. Now, my first reaction was anger. Who the fuck are y'all think you're talking to? But that anger got me up off the sofa. That anger got me back into the meetings. And in getting back into the meetings, I got back in touch with where my help is. And even in finding where my help is, a lot of times, if you're an addict like I'm an addict, you operate on the broke clock theory. Even a broke clock is right twice a day. Because it's only in hindsight that I begin to experience some things and I begin to learn the lessons. And sometimes you learn a lesson and you don't know how to put it into words until you hear somebody else share it. And what I'm talking about is my friend Thomas P. recently said that a lot of times we use God as our resource instead of our source. And he was talking about me. He was talking about me because a lot of times when I'm, especially in the later years in recovery, when I'm trying to find a physical solution for a spiritual problem, it's because I've gotten into the thing of mechanical prayers. You know, when you just go through the motions and you say the same words with no feeling, and it's the same prayer continuously, that you're not looking at the circumstances in your life as to where you really need help or what you should really be grateful for. I am 53 years old, and most of the guys I grew up with are dead. Most of them. The very few that are alive, there ain't too many of them I'd like to live their life. Whereas when I was using, those were the guys that I really wanted to be. But do I have gratitude for stuff like that? Do I have gratitude that, like, no, I'm not a captain of industry. I'll probably be working all my life. But just the ability to work, bring home a paycheck, and maintain a household, do I have any real gratitude for that? Do I come into meetings and understand that in the fifth tradition it talks about an addict, any addict, can stop using, lose the desire to use, which we all profess, but we seem to leave out that last part, find a new way of life. That means you got to give up some of that old stuff, Artie. That as you peel those layers away, you're going to get in touch with some things that are part of your old belief system. And that old belief system is what got you into the mess that you're in, not just back then, even now. You know why I still work this program and go to meetings regularly? First step. First step talks about reservations. I got reservations deep down inside of me that I don't even know exist yet because I've been stuffing for years. I've been stuffing stuff for years, so there's a reservation down there somewhere that is waiting to surface, and my disease ain't going to let it come up until the right time. So I need to keep coming here. I need to stay in touch with where my help comes from and how my help comes. I need to be aware of things like we have learned that if the solution isn't practical, it isn't spiritual. And if it isn't spiritual, it ain't gonna last. It's a hell of a thing to pray for a seventh tradition woman, but you ain't doing no goddamn work on yourself. So when you get that seventh tradition woman and she wants to talk about some issues, you like that. So I have to look at the spiritual part of it and look at how I need to keep the focus on me. Best way to keep the focus on me is to work a tenth tradition. Mind my own fucking business. I need to stay out of your problems. I need to stay out of your relationships. I need to leave you and your sponsor alone. I need to be getting with mine. Because the bottom line is, you have the right to change your mind at any time you choose. And if you do, I'm still left with me. And if I haven't learned how to live with me, I can't live with you. And what's even worse, that after you've left, I'm stuck with me again and find out how much I can't stand myself. Because I was using you to self-medicate me. I'm an individual that used to get in long-distance relationships because I wanted a service. You know, when you long distance, you don't have the time to get real close and real intimate. That usually your time together is very limited, so you're going to make the best of it. So there's no real growth. There's no having a conflict and learning conflict resolution skills. I had to get in touch with that I wasn't looking for a mate, I was looking for a service. I had to grow up. I had to learn to deal with me. And in learning to deal with me, what I began to understand, what I began to see was each one of those relationships was a preparation. Because as I went through each one, I was better the next time it came around. That as it kept going, I started developing some standards. I no longer wanted a Maybelline queen. I wanted a woman of substance. That in that process, I learned how, you know, you don't always have to settle. Sometimes it's better to just be at home by yourself whipping the wood than it is going through the motions of acting like you like somebody that you can't stand. But it takes courage to do that. Courage is a spiritual principle. In order for me to operate under spiritual principles, I gotta go to a place that allows me to develop spiritual conditioning. So yeah, I, as an addict going on 20 years, I still go to meetings. I still show up at my home group, not just when I need to celebrate. I show up at Group Conscience long before my anniversary. I want to know what's going on in the structure of my home group because that's my lifeline. It's real easy to go other places and share and nobody knows what the hell is really going on. It's real easy to get off the pipe and get hooked on the mic. But can you go somewhere and practice true intimacy, which is not a physical act, but a stripping down and making yourself vulnerable enough for another person to nurture you? Can you do that? That's a tall order. That's a tall order when you're talking about an insecure egomaniac with an inferiority complex. That's a tall order for a person who has huge control issues because of the fact that he hasn't learned how to trust others. But then you sit back and you do some work and you look at something like a 10th step and you get in touch with, oh, do you know something? The first relationship you got into clean was with your sponsor. And I've had the same sponsor for a little over 19 and a half years. So what that tells me is I'm capable of a healthy relationship. I'm capable of a healthy relationship if I'm willing to put forth the work because me and my sponsor do not agree on everything.
No, we don't.
Me and my sponsor don't always see things eye to eye. But me and my sponsor have learned how to respect each other. We've learned how to be honest with each other. We've learned how to trust each other. We've learned how to show up for each other. And no matter what, we have learned how not to judge each other. I am not an individual who's capable of unconditional love. I'm going to tell you up front. But I am capable of unconditional acts. And my sponsor taught me how to do that. And I found out that love is not a feeling, it's an action. You demonstrate love. And through that demonstration, you begin to find out some things, such as early in recovery, they said, if you want to get in a relationship, why don't you get in a relationship with yourself? And then after you do that, get in a relationship with God. And then after you do that, you might be ready for a relationship with another human being. I don't thank God for when I got clean. I thank God for the people he put in my life when I got clean. Because I don't care what anybody says. People influence you. And I had some people that came to me early in recovery, said things like, shut the fuck up. Sit down. If we want to know how to use and where to cop from, we'll ask you. What's on the first page of the basic text? It's blank, just like your fucking head, Artie. So shut up. That's what they gave me. And yeah, I may have stood up and stepped to the guy that said it, but I seen seven other motherfuckers behind him. That's called unity. You don't see that anymore. You don't see that anymore. Standing up for principle. And maybe if I practice standing up for principle a little bit more, I won't be so quick to pick up a physical solution or what I think is what I think would be the solution. Maybe I'll start looking at the source to see where he directs or what resource he directs me to. Because I'm sorry, I did not have an epiphany laying on the couch watching Jerry Springer. It usually comes from some writing, some praying, some meditation, and then some continued reflection as I'm sitting in a meeting and hearing somebody share something that really has nothing to do with what I'm going through, but when I'm listening and listening to what they're not saying, they've given me the answer. That's how Narcotics Anonymous works for this addict. And all the time, it ain't easy. All the time, it doesn't happen just like that. But what I found out is a day at a time, if I just show up, things will work themselves out. Not the way I want them, the way that they're supposed to be. So if I can give any message to anybody, old-timer, newcomer, in-betweener, it is never too late to be the person you've always were meant to be. Just work the program of Narcotics Anonymous. Thanks for allowing me to share.